Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast and another page from my notebook. Today's focus is going to be on two situations that maybe we don't think enough about, but can really make the difference in the game. And I'm going to talk about them together because I would find a way as an offensive coordinator to find some synergy in our practice and being able to put it together a package that was going to work and have some carryover in both areas. And so those two areas are you're coming out of your backed up offense when you're in the shadow of your goalposts, and the other is the 4-minute offense. And we're going to talk about both of those separately, but there's some rationale on why I would tie these two packages together. Let's start with some of the commonalities in these situations and why I would handle them similarly. The first is in this situation, when I'm backed up, and again, this is not a knock against any spread offenses. Is that what you do? I've seen teams be successful with this. This is just my belief. But number one, ball handling is of utmost importance. So this would be a situation. I never wanted to take a shotgun snap from our own end zone, and in situations where the game was on the line, I preferred to get under center and hand the ball off on some downhill runs, preferring that over some read option stuff or having some shotgun ball handling where there is that element that the snap could go wrong and you give the ball back to the other team. So that would be one consideration. The next is I do like to add extra gaps in this situation. So backed up, they know that most likely we're not going to throw the ball as much, especially longer throws out on the edges that can quickly go the other way. But at the same time, you know, we have to consider how do we spread the defense out. And I would think in this situation, utilizing some heavy personnel, whether that's 21 or 22, there become some advantages today. So many teams are used to defending the spread that they're getting more and more into nickel packages, and they don't necessarily match up well with the 22 or 21 personnel. That causes some issues there. Where do you find these guys? And if you would go back to a podcast I had with a state champ from Delaware, Mike Judy, he talked exactly about this, how he uses a 2-platoon at a small school, but he's doing that with the use of some guys like that in special situations. So for me, even at the college level, we ran a lot of 11 and 12 personnel, but our bodies at the tight end spot were maybe more finesse guys. And in some situations, we would look to get a bigger body in there. And some guys who maybe were linebackers or defensive ends that had played those, you know, tight end or fullback positions in high school, those guys might be utilized a little bit at the college level. And so I think you have those guys in your program, but if you've become an all-spread team, you might not be using them on the offensive side of the ball. So take a look. You might have those guys you need to provide some bigger bodies in these situations. The next thing, thinking of this, spreading the defense as far as the gaps, is you start to take away that chance that somebody's going to come quickly off the edge into the backfield and make that tackle for a loss, or worse, be there at the mesh point and cause some kind of problem with the ball handling. You end up putting the ball on the ground. So I like those wider edges for that reason. From a play package perspective, you're kind of looking at the same things. In general, your goal coming out is to get a first down, to be able to punt at your full snap distance and not have to shorten that up and risk a block punt. Ideally, you're getting a first down and you're moving those chains before you would have to do that. That being said, you really don't want to run a lot of long developing plays. You want to get downhill as quickly as possible. The other side is most likely trying to penetrate some gaps right here. And so you want to be able to do some things that allow you to get downhill. What we really like to focus on in the two plays we look to in that regard would be our zone lead play to, in this case, what would be considered the weak side. A lot of times we were double tight here, but we would put a wing or a flanker to the other side. So one side we would consider weak. So we would look at a zone lead or an ISO type play there off of our zone blocking scheme. And then the other thing we would like to do is be able to gap down and run our power scheme. So that would be, a lot of times we're in the gun or our pistol. We're more in 11 personnel, 12 personnel. We're running some one-back power. This would be a case where we utilize our two-back power, which we had a conversion that didn't make it a completely different scheme. There would just be communication between the tight end and the fullback. As you look at the 4-minute situation, there would be some carryover to our goal line package. The same thing going in. I preferred to, once we hit inside the five, have us get under center, get downhill quickly, take care of some of those extra gaps now that the defense could attack because they're not as worried about the vertical space. They might be matched up in man and have that extra rusher. So now we would look to spread them out with gaps. In that, we would look for some of our pin and pull, our sweep play, stretch play, perhaps, if we were using that, to get to the edge and to be able to get to the perimeter, take the perimeter and get into the end zone. Or in this case, when we're talking about a four-minute offense, I don't prefer it coming out of the end zone, but a four-minute offense, kind of those stretch plays, those sweep plays, they take a little bit longer. They're going to chew up more clock, and there's the potential that with everybody packed in, you may be able to bust a play and pick up a first down. So that would be the addition to the four-minute. If you were getting under center, you certainly could expand that to some of the things you were doing on the goal line in those situations. In both the four-minute and in backed up, I also like a protected shot. While I'm less likely to take that probably in a four-minute situation, I do think that's a good opportunity coming out of your own end zone to look at a shot. They're going to, especially if they're playing up, they're playing tighter coverage, maybe bringing some extra pressure to try to force a turnover or to make you punt there from your own end zone. It's a good opportunity for a fully protected shot down the field. I don't necessarily like any kind of rollout or sprint out right there. I really don't prefer it in the 4 minute either, unless you're able to bring somebody extra as a protector. So not a true naked, but something where maybe you're bringing that fullback all the way across and he's essentially becoming kind of that boot protector with a guard, or something where you're pulling a guard and getting him out front for protection. I listened to a podcast, one of the first ones we did with Chris Kappas, who at the time was Football Scoops Defensive Coordinator of the Year at Division III level, and coming off a national championship. And he talked specifically about situations where he looked for turnovers. And at Mount Union, they're really good at causing turnovers. And one of those areas he focused on was exactly that, the rollout passes, the naked passes, being able to come off that edge and hit that quarterback before he's able to get his head around and separate him from the ball. So for that reason alone, I probably would stay away from some of those unprotected nakeds. But if there's something you could bring an extra guy, a blocker, to pick up that guy and allow your guy to run, I think it becomes like that sweep play. So prefer it less coming out, a little bit more in four-minute offense. Another thing to think about in both of those situations is your cadence. I think cadence really becomes a weapon here. For us, the first thing we'd always do, and this would be in our Thursday practices at the college level, when we would get the team, our first play was on the minus one, and we were always going on two. For us, thought of losing maybe a half a yard versus gaining five on something simple like the snap count was huge. And I think, again, it's a situation where the defense is pinning their ears back. They're coming at you. They have that aggressive mentality. To come out there and go on two would be very important. But like I said, it's something we practiced every single week. The first play of every Thursday, our guys just got to know exactly what it was. We were going on two right there and looking for the opportunity to draw them off sides. So let's talk a little bit about the play package in these areas. And it starts with a four-play base. So two things I'm looking for, as I mentioned before, those two base runs, downhill runs we're used to running that are going to get the ball off tackle, but in a way that we feel good about. A lot of times, whether it be goal line, backed up, or four-minute, I would favor running that towards what I felt were our two best linemen. In some instances, we would simply move our guard maybe over to a different tackle, and we felt that put our two best guys together when we would run behind them. Yes, we're giving something away, but I'd rather be executing and going to somewhere we feel best, we feel strongest, rather than running somewhere we felt weak. In addition to those two runs I already mentioned, we would have a scripted shot in there. That's a shot we would work. Usually it was fully protected, some kind of a double move. I really liked, against really a one high or two high defense, a post corner. I did like to get the ball away from the middle of the field in those instances, because again, if you look at what do I have on the field, I have bigger personnel. There's five guys out there who aren't used to tackling in space. So we want to avoid any kind of those situation where the ball is in the middle of the field and the whole field is there for us to cover. I felt pretty good about being able to put a ball on a post corner to the outside and have our guy at the very worst go win a 50-50 ball. And we would always make sure that if he didn't feel comfortable, that he could come up with it, become the defender, knock it away so we can line up another down. In addition to the play action shot, we would always script a third and medium and a third and long. Just one of those. And typically, those are things we would run throughout the course of the year in our practices. We would carry them into the game plan. We wouldn't switch them up a whole lot because if you look at most situations, there's not necessarily a ton of data. You're not going to see it happen as much where a team is backed up that you could say you got some true tendencies on them from film. Same thing with a four-minute situation. Sometimes it's even hard to tell when a team might have gone into that kind of stuff, especially if they bounce back and forth between under center. Obviously, in this case, they might know you're going to a four-minute situation and start to develop their game plan accordingly. The next thing to understand in that four-minute situation is how much clock you can kill. So in general, looking at the charts that are out there, with three timeouts, the opponent having three timeouts, you're going to be able to kill 15 seconds. With two timeouts, you'll be able to kill 40. One timeout, a minute and five. And if they have no timeouts, you'll be able to kill a minute and 30. So without getting a first down, no timeouts, you're able to kill a minute and 30 seconds. So if you're inside of that, that's the time where you can go ahead and take a knee. The important thing is that somehow you're able to practice these situations. I think one thing you need to look at in this is when are you going to do it? For us, it was always towards the end of the week on a Thursday for us at the high school level. That might be on a Wednesday, but a day where we were going through and kind of reviewing the whole game plan, and we wouldn't spend a ton of time towards this, but we, like I said, we would work it all the time coming out. We would work that for four plays, backed up. We would then go ahead and put the ball down the field a little bit, and then we would simulate. We wouldn't go through the whole exercise of waiting till there was 5 seconds from the referee or on the play clock, if you have one of those and you can see it, where our quarterback is understanding that. We would work those situations, you know, as soon as we would break the huddle or get our play in, and we've done it both ways where we'd hand signal those in. Some of it we would huddle. But after our players would get that, then we would go ahead and simulate that right away, that there's 5 seconds, so that we're not killing the tempo of practice or the time we have in practice by just waiting around to stop that clock. The other thing to remember is to teach your players what stops the clock. So obviously our quarterback needs to be aware that a sack in this situation is probably better than an incomplete pass. Our ball carriers and our receivers need to understand that at all costs, if they can, go down in bounds. Even if that means giving up or getting less yardage, giving up some yardage to keep the clock running. That's the important thing. But I would say this, you need to make it very clear that this is what you're going to do in those situations. This is your game plan. This is the personnel that needs to be on a field. The worst thing you could do in the 4 minute is have to call a timeout because your guys can't remember what they're supposed to do or what's going on. So again, you're going to pick those plays for your offensive line that they're best at. That's something in your base you do all the time. For those other guys that you put on the field, you just make sure that you do this enough that this becomes part of what they understand is their responsibility, that it's just not happening for the first time on game day. The nice thing about utilizing an under center offense for some of these things is that you can get some of those quick hitters. For us, we would run zone offense quite a bit. Using a zone fullback dive would be a great here. Just a quick read one way or the other in a gap off of a cover lineman was something where our fullback, if he was a runner and he's used to running the football, something he could gain us some yards in. Whether it's the fullback or the quarterback, that wedge situation to pick up that extra yard is built right into that package. Again, some of that for us was carryover to what we would utilize in our goal line, and we would take that goal line a lot of times and carry it over to our third and short. I think it's one of those situations when you're backed up, you can get into your offense. For me, it was always, can we take a snap that is not in the end zone? So for us, making sure we were probably at least 5, maybe 6 yards from that goal line was important to me, that I just didn't want a snap that could be mishandled and end up in the end zone for somebody to fall on for a touchdown. So usually that's, sometimes we would extend that. We go a little bit further, depending on how conservative we want to be. But for us, it was usually just about picking up anywhere from 4 to 5 or 6 yards to get us out of that area where we were having to take a shotgun snap in our end zone, because we did want to run everything for us out of the pistol formation. Now, if I was a team that was utilizing spread and I wanted to stay in the spread to do this, and maybe I was somebody running out of 10 personnel, I might look to do some things like on the backside of our zone runs, bringing the receiver across in motion and just stopping him at that edge, almost like the mentality of somebody playing wing on field goal block. Just make him take a wide path. You don't have to crush anybody on the line of scrimmage. You're just making him go around so that he can't get directly to that mesh point or make a play in the backfield. And I've seen quite a few teams do that over time. I think it's pretty effective in that situation. So whatever you do, I think you have to have a plan for 4 minute. I think you have to have a plan for coming out. Again, I would consider if you have the people doing some of those things I mentioned with the under center package, but it's not necessary. The biggest thing is you plan for and prepare for that situation. And I think the best thing about it, whatever level you're at, you could probably carry that package throughout the season. Like I said, there's not going to be very many times where you're actually going to get that on film that a team could develop tendencies from what you've done in that area. So best of luck. Those are my ideas from my notebook for this week. And I'll be talking to you soon about some more things I have tucked away there. One thing I want you to save the date for is our national conference, which is coming up in February 22nd through the 24th in Orlando, Florida. I'm really excited about the group we're putting together to speak at this. I think there's some great topics here that are going to help you with your program. And I think the biggest part of this is the networking portion. Of all the guys I've had attend, they've talked about the national conference and said how great it was to be able to hear somebody from somewhere else and to be able to connect with them and share some similar issues and come up with some different solutions. And for a lot of guys, it's the Twitter universe that they take part in, that they're going to have these guys in Twitter chats, and now all of a sudden you're meeting up at the national conference, and it's great to be able to finally put a face to the name. So check that out. If you want to register, that's available now at usafootball.com/NC19podcast. Again, that's usafootball.com/NC19podcast. I look forward to seeing you there.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.